We try to play with great pace. We try to play with great pace. Ran a lot of pick and roll, pick and pop type actions. Oh, you'll see us play. Some people look at the guy next to him and say, what the hell was that shot? Hell, I could have been Gronk before Gronk was Gronk.
And welcome back to another episode of Bangarangs and Daggers. I'm your co-host out here in our allergy-riddled capital, sporting the cherry blossoms out here, but all the pollen that comes with it, Kevin Knight. And with me tonight is, of course, my co-host out in Nebraska, Patrick Gearhart. Patrick, how are you doing?
Hidey-ho, neighbor. I'm not too bad. It's cold, chilly, and a little bit damp outside here, so yeah.
Well, I hope you're hiding your fence, your face behind the fence there, neighbor.
my fence is not that high, and it's wrought iron.
Well, no, Mr. Wilson, are you? But
no, and I don't think I might have a bucket hat somewhere. I might have a bucket hat somewhere. Anyway, so we haven't done we have not done a podcast in probably a month.
It might not have been that long, but there's been some developments in Husker sports since then, and particularly Husker hoops. So, bit of an end of season on there. After all, it's now the long, long off season until October.
Yeah, or in Nebraska or in Hoiberg world, it's transfer season.
Very true. Although, extra transfer season this year with the presumed. Is that vote going to come this week or next week on that? Should be coming soon at any rate. The one-time eligibility waiver extension for 2021-22 while they still continue to work out their long-term permanent one-time transfer rule, but still hasn't been passed yet. But with it, there seems to be a lot of transfer news across everybody, not just Nebraska, but especially once again Nebraska.
Yeah, no, I mean, it's Nebraska was guaranteed to have some guys transfer out and of course opening positions to guys coming in, but it seems like kind of across the board there's been a lot of schools having the same problem. Whether you want to look at it as a problem or just, you know, guys getting pushed out. I feel like some of the guys that are transferring out of Nebraska were guys who weren't necessarily going to see a lot of court time. So, you know, it wouldn't surprise me if they ended up at maybe a lower power school or group of five school, I guess, if you may. But no, there's quite a few schools with a lot of people transferring in and out, a lot of good schools, a lot of not so good schools. So it's kind of across the board right now, but I guess that's just kind of the world we're living in. So yeah, we'll see what happens.
Yeah. And I mean, in some cases it's good too, in the sense that, looking at it from perspective of a revolving door with head coaches, I think total Penn State, Minnesota, and Indiana all had roughly six guys at each school enter the transfer portal after their head coach was fired at each respective school. Since then, it's gone down. Some of them have decided to return with the new hire. But I think one of the biggest criticisms that even people like myself have with schools is if you're recruited to one school by a head coach and the head coach leaves or is fired, but then you're stuck there in a system that maybe doesn't necessarily fit, is kind of one of the blatant injustices that the NCAA has to a degree, in terms of, you know, if somebody comes in and it's just not a good fit, it's not a good fit and you wouldn't have gone there in the first place. So there's certainly some benefits to it too, I think, but then there's just other scenarios where it doesn't fit and whatnot. But at least in that case, I think it's something that is an improvement, arguably.
No, I would agree. I think it's definitely an improvement. It definitely empowers the players, which it should. I mean, you get those situations where, you know, coaches can up and leave at any point for a different job. Why can't players? But, it's been ramped up over the past few years. I think this is probably one of those off seasons where we've seen a lot of it, more so than normal. But I think in the grand scheme of things, it will probably take care of itself. I think over time, you're going to see more and more players transferring out and not being exactly happy. And I think, you know, that might send a message to current players at schools that have not transferred out of, that, you know, maybe maybe transferring out when you're not happy isn't always the best answer. So
yeah, I definitely agree.
You know, I think over time you'll see less and less players doing this, you know, but that's just me.
Yeah, one thing that I'd be interested in is, especially this particular year, what the percentage of student-athletes choosing to transfer looks like as a percentage compared to regular students, particularly when counterimposed on athletes who choose to go to a school a number of states away or even across the country, and compare that with students who chose to go to a school, you know, a number of states away or halfway across the country, and proceeded to then transfer out after their freshman year, after, you know, this year in particular. I think that would be something that'd be kind of interesting, just see if athletes transfer out at a higher percentage when given the opportunity, or if they transfer out at a lower percentage in comparison. Because I don't know, it's just something that stats nerd like me would be interested in. But I suppose maybe I should quit rambling on here about transfer news and maybe just talk about the closure of the 2020-2021 Nebraska Cornhuskers men's basketball season, huh?
Yeah, I mean, it was kind of, it ended without major fanfare in the first round of the Big Ten tournament. Not terribly surprised. Our beloved Huskers had another losing season, but it was another transition season. There was growth there, I feel. I feel like the coaching staff seems to be a little bit better off than it was the first year. There was definitely progress as the year went on, especially considering they had that almost full month off due to COVID outbreaks within the team, and which really affected the team and coaching staff. And, you know, it's just it was a tough year. And I don't think a lot of people realize how tough it was on those players. And I think the players probably don't even know how tough it was on them until they get a little retrospect in the situation. So it'll be interesting to see what happens. But we've got some good players coming back next year. Nebraska should be in a very good position to do well in the Big Ten. It'll be interesting to see who else comes back in the other teams. But for the most part, I think, you know, this is definitely a right. The record doesn't show it, for obvious reasons, but because this was another tough conference year. But I think in the grand scheme of things, Nebraska's really positioned themselves for a good 2021-22 season. So,
yeah, I mean, it's definitely not going to be the same Big Ten that it was the past two seasons, I don't think. I don't imagine that both DeSunmu and Coburn are back at Illinois, for example. Marcus Carr is gone from Minnesota, as is Richard Pitino Jr., and they're clearly in a rebuild mode. Rutgers already had a down year in comparison to last season, which was stronger for them, and unfortunate that the big NCAA tournament was canceled as a result. I mean, they're still a good team under Pacquel, but you know, it's still a different roster. Iowa's clearly losing Luca Garza at a minimum, as well as maybe a number of other players. Northwestern, probably a school a little bit on the rise, but I mean, same situation as Nebraska, at least in terms of where they're rising from. And I'm not sure that they have quite as high of a ceiling. Penn State, one of the schools that lost most of its current roster and pretty much all their main contributors. Maryland, you know, kind of middle of the pack, lose most likely Eric Ayala. Wisconsin's going to lose some guys. Michigan going to lose some guys. It's going to be a completely different Big Ten next season without likely as much depth. And with the practice that everybody got under their belt, molding together this season, and I think with some of the progress that we saw with one of the earlier attritions from the roster, definitely should set Husker fans up for some optimism to finally see some growth from Hoiberg, for sure. I know the final game on our last pod was just before the Iowa game, and obviously that one was a tough loss, 102-64, but I mean, tough loss at Northwestern. After that, on the 7th, just 1 point, should have won it.
Heartbreaker.
Yeah, and then against Penn State, I mean, they gave it quite a good effort against Penn State and definitely had a shot to advance to Thursday. And, I mean, I think the final score of just a 6-point loss is, frankly, Not even as close as the game was, really. But I don't know. Maybe that's just me.
Mm-hmm. No, I'd fully agree. I would fully agree. It's going to be an interesting transition for the Big Ten. I mean, the past two seasons, they've been definitely one of the best power conferences out there, regardless of how things turned out in the NCAA tournament this year. But, you know, if you're a team that's progressing and is improving to the point to where they could really take advantage of a down season, next year is going to be it. You know, I see Nebraska possibly being in that position, like you said. You know, I think Purdue's got some guys coming back that could really probably push them back up to where they want to be seen. You've got new coaches at Minnesota, Indiana, Penn State. Where else? Is that it?
Yeah, that's it. I mean, there's some movement on the assistant level, too, obviously. Michigan State's going to have to find a new assistant. Indiana poached one of their longstanding guys. Nebraska has a new assistant coach with the departure of Lutz. Doc Sadler has moved into the role of special assistant advisor, whatever the role is, where he's not actually an active coach, but rather more of a behind the scenes consultant, for lack of a better way of phrasing it, to Coach Hoiberg. Yeah. And then we have a new assistant coach on the bench, former Chicago Bulls assistant under Hoiberg, Nate Lonzer. Gonna have to learn how to pronounce his name.
Yeah, I think that's right.
Yeah, we'll go with that until somebody proves me wrong. So, but yeah, so I mean, there's definitely some changes to the coaching staff beyond just those three positions, and certainly an early point in the coaching carousel. There's still a number of high profile openings that have only recently been filled, or are still looking for new positions and are going to need new assistants. So we'll see what ends up happening. Oh, and I mean, I should have remembered this. Penn State's head coach was actually poached from Purdue's bench. Their associate head coach is now the Penn State head coach. So, I mean, another example of a high profile assistant being poached from a program. And he'd had a lot of success with Purdue's offense the last few years. So, it's going to be a different league, I think, still a strong one, but no means by no means at all remotely as strong.
Yeah.
But let's.
Unfortunately, we're recording this far enough away from the end of Nebraska season that everything's kind of settled to the point to where I think we've all mentally moved on to next year. Do you really want to talk about the national championship?
I mean, not really. I like Gonzaga. So I wasn't particularly happy with that. I don't think that was indicative of how good Gonzaga was all season. They clearly peaked the second weekend and were obviously tired from the UCLA game. They're a much stronger shooting team than they showed in that. No offense to Baylor's defense by any means, but I mean,
because Baylor's defense was good. I mean, they came out physical, more so than Gonzaga. And you know, to Baylor's credit, they hit the shots they were supposed to, and they kept Gonzaga from shooting theirs, which is something that the Bulldogs had yet to see all year. I mean, most teams they played against, they kind of shot at their will. And Baylor just did not let them until the second half. I mean, they had a good run in the second half that tightened up the score. But Baylor just clamped down early on. And lucky for them, their shots came in early. And it was more than enough to win that game. I think I messaged you or somebody, maybe somebody in the coordination Slack that, you know, a few hours earlier, I said, Baylor's going to win. And my thoughts on it were just based on the fact that Baylor played in a tougher conference, which everybody thought was going to hurt Gonzaga in the tournament, which it really didn't. I mean, they went above and beyond their conference schedule by far, but Baylor played in a tougher conference against tougher teams. And in the end, the Final Four Gonzaga, at the last second, beat a very good but not great UCLA team. And in the Final Four, Baylor destroyed a very good, almost great Houston team. And to me, that was kind of the deciding factor going into that game, that Gonzaga just, you know, great coach team, great talent, going to have a bright, you know, it has had a great past, is going to have a bright future. But it was just nowhere near what Baylor put on the court. And I would say probably 3 out of 5 times Baylor was going to win that game.
I don't know if I'd quite give them that that type of odds. It's not to detract from them. They are a good team. I just do think that the Zags just fell flat on their face in terms of it. I mean, they had good defense against them, but I just don't think, from looking at their season, that you don't necessarily see them going up against tough defenses at times, maybe at quite the same level, but I mean, with the same type of pressure in their face at times, and they still hit the shot. I mean, they sometimes teams just have a poor shooting night. So it's more so the result that I dispute in terms of the stark disparity in score.
Hi, this is Scott Galloway, professor of marketing at NYU Stern School of Business and host of the Prof G Pod. If you don't know me, the New York Times calls me the Howard Stern of business. Kara Swisher, super friggin' insightful, and Elon Musk, an insufferable numbskull. I think we're going to make up. I think we're going to go somewhere and do ketamine together. Each week on my show, the Prof G Pod, we bring you insights from blue flame thinkers, including my nemesis, Adam Grant. Super smart guy. My nemesis because he's really good. Or one of our favorite journalists, Fareed Zakaria. Fareed's a total gangster. And not only that, we provide listeners with a markets-driven episode every Monday. We answer our listeners' questions about business, big tech, and career pivots every Wednesday, and get to listen to the sweet sound of George Hahn reading our newsletter every Saturday. That's right. The Prop G Pod is in your feeds 4 times a week. I'm like AOL in the 90s. To resist is futile. Put your hand into a box of cereal. Is it a tasty, sugary snack? Nope. It's the dog.
It would maybe probably be three times out of five, but I think 1 time out of 5, each team is going to have that kind of a shooting night on both sides where they get blown out. And the other 2 times, you're going to see a really close game with each one winning. And then maybe finally that fifth game is when you see a close game where Baylor ends up, you know, having the edge 3 out of 5. But I just think that they had a poor performance in the final 2 games. I think the full body of work, you know, everybody has a cold night, not to take away from Baylor's defense, but it wasn't just Baylor's defense that did it. I'm not saying Baylor isn't an elite team. They didn't make the title game without that.
Like I said, they made the shots that mattered early on. Like they were hot coming out. Their defense was locked down and their shooting was hot. And again, you know, I don't think that Baylor's going to blow them out 3 out of 5 times, but I think they would still win 3 out of those 5 times.
And I think, having seen it, I think I can definitely see that being the case. I just definitely don't think that we would normally see the result that we saw Monday night in most other scenarios is all.
No, I fully agree. No. Fully agree on that. But no, I mean, it's and as I think we saw online, not everybody is happy that Baylor won with their past history of an athletic department, particularly in regards to football and go back 15 years, basketball. So,
Yeah, really? People object to basketball players murdering their teammate?
That's a bad thing. It was a bad, bad situation. I remember I was in college when all that went down. I mean, it's still pretty fresh in my memory, for sure. But nonetheless, Baylor made it through the round of 64 teams, and they are a national champion for the next year until, you know, maybe a Pac-12 school is going to win it next year.
Yeah. I mean, it wouldn't be me without throwing in this dig. Congrats to the Big 12. You now have 3 national titles in the modern tournament era. Congratulations. You're still way behind every other P6 league.
3. You got Kansas twice, Baylor once.
And that's it. The modern tournament era, to be fair. Kansas claims three, and they do have three, but one of them comes back from the 50s when, frankly, the NIT was arguably the real national title tournament at that point. So that's what I say. It's just sort of that it's similar to football, where before we had BCS and before we had this and before we had that, there's all these disputes over what was the true national title. And you can claim it by all means, but I mean, the NIT was arguably the national title until around the early 60s or so.
But don't most people in the sporting world consider like 1936 or 1938 to be kind of the start of the modern era of that?
Yeah, some do, but I don't.
I would say a majority do and you don't.
That's fine. I mean, I'm perfectly happy to be in the minority and be right. And you know what? We have a fantastic, one of our best episodes is interviewing somebody who would back me up on that with his national title from 1945. So...
I'm not touching it.
anybody who claims the Helms, anybody who claims a Helms era championship is frankly deluding themselves. That's for sure. Everybody agrees on that. So
anywho. God, Nate never showed up, did he?
No. And also Oklahoma State claims two from the 40s. They're also one of the other programs that does. I think Texas has one from like the Helms era.
I think in the 20s.
Which is before even what is considered the modern, by my disputed definition of it, a modern tournament era. Texas, get out of here with that. Like, you might as well just claim the national title with the NIT tournament that you won in, what was it, 18, I think? 19? I forget.
Back when they were still, you know, wearing knee highs and shooting free throws between the legs.
It was funny because they sent out a graphic on Twitter saying, oh, we won the national championship. And within about 5-10 minutes, they deleted it and tweeted out the correct version with the NIT logo.
Saying,
we won the NIT instead of we won the cool national title.
One cool thing I didn't see was that this is the first national championship for the state, for a school in the state of Texas since UTEP won it, or back when they were Texas Western back in
68 maybe. Yeah, I remember that as well. Yeah, that was pretty hilarious.
Which is a really cool story. What was the name of that movie? It came out about 10-15 years ago. Had to do with that Texas Western team.
Because
weren't they the first all African-American led team?
Maybe. Was it Glory Road? Is that right?
I want to say it was a good film. It was a good film. I need to rewatch that film. But yeah, I think, Texas Western way back then. And another connection, former Nebraska or current Nebraska special assistant, Doc Sadler was, you know, head coach there back before he coached at Nebraska. We poached him.
Yeah, it was Glory Road, and it was 1966 NCAA University Division Basketball Championship.
There we
Texas
go.
Western College.
Way out there in El Paso, practically Mexico and New Mexico.
Yep. Honestly haven't actually seen that one yet.
I recommend it. I think you'd like it. It's just a good one. It's a good feel-good show, and I thought it was real well-made. Good story. Good feel-good story, you know. So,
mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Yeah, it's on my list someday. I just haven't gotten to it.
One of like 3,000 movies people have told you to probably watch. Gotcha. Anyway, that's kind of all I got. What do you got?
That's mostly what I got. Any guesses on the tournament for next season? Let's have some fun with that. They have not announced it as far as I know.
What do you mean?
The preseason tournament, or that early season tournament, not preseason, my bad. So,
for Nebraska to play into?
Yeah, this past year was supposed to be Myrtle Beach. The year before that, it was...
No idea.
The Cayman Islands and who the hell knows before that.
Yeah. Yeah, I don't know what they're going to do.
Won't be Atlantis. I know that much.
I was just going to say, the one thing I don't like about NCAA basketball, or at least Big Ten basketball, is that we don't know our schedule until like September.
Usually it's been August most of the time, like maybe early to mid-August. This past year was obviously a huge difference, but they typically announce the opponent matchups by about June.
Mm-hmm. But we don't know the latest schedule.
Late May, early June. But actually,
or maybe late August. I'm just looking at old stuff. Like it's like I wrote an article a couple years ago on August 22nd. So
yeah, they've gradually moved it up a little bit every year, I feel like, especially for the last couple of years. But I think I realized last year you can usually predict the June announcement of who they'll play, how many times. You know, are you going to play this team round robin, home and home, or are you going to play them only on the road or only at home? You can usually predict with about 95% accuracy what it's going to be based on your last 2 years worth of schedule with the 20 game schedule, because it's every school that you played at home, mm-hmm. you're going to play them at home and on the road. Every team that you played on the road only, you're going to play at home and on the road. And every team mm-hmm. that you played at home and on the road the previous year, you're going to play the opposite of whatever you did the year prior. So mm-hmm. if Michigan State, for example, Nebraska is going to play in East Lansing this upcoming 21-22 season. And that's it. They're going to play Michigan State once, and it's going to be in East Lansing.
Nice.
As an example. So
yeah.
So I you can book it, take it to the bookie, the casino, the whatever, if you're a betting person. That is going to be one of the games. When it falls in the schedule, couldn't begin to guess or tell you. And this past year, it was pretty obvious Wisconsin flipped with Iowa as being Nebraska's locked-in home-and-home opponent because not to – you know, harp on schedule topics too much, but with the protected in-state rivalries of Northwestern Illinois, Indiana, Purdue, and Michigan State, Michigan, the other schools are left to a rotating basis of sort of near geographical opponents. So for Nebraska, that means Minnesota, Iowa, and Wisconsin rotate in a group of four for the same type of protected rivalry roughly every 2 year cycle. So prior to this, Nebraska faced Iowa home and home for two straight years, roughly. Now it's clearly going to be Wisconsin, then it'll be Minnesota, and then it'll go back to Iowa again. So,
yeah, I didn't pay attention to anything you just said.
It really wasn't that uninteresting of a topic, Patrick. Come on, give me some credit.
No, it was good. It was good. No, I kind of forget that those in-state rivalries are protected.
Yeah, I mean, it's a huge controversy for the schools that are there. And I mean, to be fair, I get that it's not a conference issue for a school like Nebraska. But, you know, I mean, moving to the 20-game schedule with the Big Ten schedule does imperil, to a certain degree, the Nebraska-Creighton rivalry in basketball. And obviously that mm-hmm. cut out the Nebraska-Creighton rivalry in baseball and volleyball this year. And that was a big deal in Nebraska. Understandably
huge.
So
that's a yeah. big moneymaker, good rivalry, you know. Yeah. I always thought Nebraska Creighton in basketball should play twice a year, and it should be home and home. I always, for some reason, just those two need to play twice, once in Omaha, once in Lincoln, call it good. Now don't get me wrong, Nebraska's record would be worse against them, I think, over the past few years, but just because of the fan bases, I always thought it would be good to do.
Yeah, and I mean, that's just exactly my point is, you know, I mean, that's an important rivalry to Nebraska. Mm-hmm. Now flip it around to any of those three rivalries that I just mentioned, and yeah. Purdue, Indiana, Michigan State, Michigan, and Northwestern Illinois are all the exact same. It's an important in-state rivalry. It yeah. has the same type of connotation, importance. Okay, maybe not Northwestern Illinois. I'm not going to make that up. But I mean, Purdue, Indiana, and Michigan, Michigan State are two of the stronger basketball rivalries in the conference.
So, Iowa State.
Yeah, exactly. Iowa State in football is huge, including in basketball.
Even in basketball. I mean, like, I would say it's probably bigger than Creighton, Nebraska because of all the extra sports. Yeah.
Yeah, so, you know, I mean, to be frank, Tim Miles made a little bit of criticism about the decision to move towards protecting those rivalries back when it was decided in the Big Ten that they would be doing that, and then later backtracked it, either because he realized that it was a fairly unpopular decision or because he just, you know, thought about it for a second, realized why it's a common sense decision for the love of the game, more or less, for fans. But, you know, I mean, it's an important thing, so... that's why that's a protected issue, and that's why the other schools are kind of left to, you know, here's schools that are close to you and therefore have some small level of importance, at least in playing them. I mean, Nebraska Iowa is a rivalry based on hate, clearly. Maybe a young rivalry, but still one clearly based on quite a bit of animosity between the programs, and so the two playing each other is important, and hence those games are now somewhat protected, similar to the in-state rivalries, but not to the same degree. So maybe they should change that and make it Minnesota-Wisconsin and Nebraska-Iowa type of scenarios. Maybe they shouldn't. I don't know. Maybe that's something to get into deeper in the offseason. But yeah, that's all I got tonight. The only game we got next year on the calendar for sure is Kansas State at PBA on December 18th.
I wonder if they're going to be any good.
They were really bad this year, right?
They were. They were bad. Okay. Yeah. No, it's been a while since K-State's been good. And they've had some good teams. They've had good teams over the past. You
know. Was it this year they got in the brawl, or was that last year before COVID?
The brawl with who?
Kansas. Kansas State got into a basketball brawl, right?
I think that was previous year.
Okay, yeah.
I think that was 2 years ago. That sounds familiar now that you mention it.
Yeah, because I feel like they had a normal crowd there for that game. So that would have been last season, yeah.
Yep.
Well, hopefully no brawl at PBA. No malice at the palace going down in Lincoln, please, and thank you.
All right, Kevin, I think we're done.
Yep. All right. Thanks, everybody. As always, please subscribe to Horn Nation Radio. You'll get all of our great podcasts, including a Bangarangs and Daggers, John's Post-Life Crisis, some of our short episodes now, and Five Heart Podcast. Please subscribe to us. Please like us. Please leave a review and follow us on Twitter, all that good stuff. You stay classy.
Love you all.